Welcome to All Bodies on Bikes, the podcast, where all bodies are good bodies, all bikes are good bikes, and all rides should be celebrated.
All Bodies on Bikes is a movement to create and foster a size-inclusive bike community. So join your hosts. I'm Maggie.
And I'm Marley.
As we explore the complexities of the biking world, help us break down barriers and create the world that we want to see. And don't forget that all bodies really means all bodies, not just larger bodies, but bodies of all sizes, ages, races, abilities, genders, sexualities, and beyond.
Come along for the ride. Hello, and welcome back to the All Bodies on Bikes podcast. This is one of your hosts, Marley Blonsky, with a little bit of an update on the show before we get into today's episode. So we've been putting on this show for a little over a year now with some incredible interviews and conversations, and we're at the point where we need to take a little bit of a break. So we're going to call it a summer break. The kids get out of school this week, and so we're going to get out of the podcasting. Well, that's not entirely true because we will continue to work on our side, but we will not have any new episodes coming out for a little while. Not entirely sure how long it's going to take. But we're going to spend the next couple months gathering interviews, getting some more material, maybe playing with the format of the show a little bit. We'll see exactly what happens with it. But I wanted to thank you all for being dedicated, loyal listeners and for all of your support. And we will be back soon with many new episodes. And now on to today's show. Today we're interviewing a very interesting person that I had the pleasure of meeting with and riding with recently in New York City, and that is Todd Nisbet. He is the founder and director of Concrete Trails. Concrete Trails is the evolution of Todd Nisbet as an adventure cyclist and bikepacker based in New York City. Todd has worked in the fashion business since his early 20s, which is about 20 years now. Primarily, he's been involved in fashion sales, but he's been a creative throughout this time as well. His work has ranged from photography to wardrobe styling and creative direction for many brands, artists, and fashion projects. Todd began as a commuter cyclist in New York City in his late 30s and quickly discovered bikepacking, which is essentially a modern-day term for bike touring and bike camping. As time passed and Todd engaged in bike camping more frequently, it became evident that fashion had found his way into his new healthy habit of cycling, in the best way possible, of course. This is kind of a funny conversation. I hope you guys enjoy it. It's a little bit of a departure from our typical conversations, but you all should definitely check out Concrete Trails. Todd, as you'll hear, Todd's inspiration is very streetwear designed and streetwear focused and inspired by what's happening in New York City, which is something we don't talk about very often. We talk a lot about country cycling and gravel cycling, but today we get into city cycling and what it's like to navigate the concrete trails of New York City. Hey, Todd, welcome to the All Bodies on Bikes podcast.
Hey, Marley, how are you? It's nice. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Of course. I'm really excited to chat with you. We got to hang out in New York when I was there a little over a week ago, and I didn't know much about you. I'm not gonna lie, I didn't know a whole lot about you until we hung out and got ice cream, and I got to know you a little bit, and I figured this guy needs to be on the podcast. So thanks for joining me.
Oh yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me, and also for reaching out to me on
of
your
course.
Visit yours and Kaylee's visit to New York City.
Yeah,
and I gotta say also, I kind of, you know, I already had the vibe from briefly meeting you at Mid-South over the past few years. I already had the vibe that, like, you know, when you reached out to me and said, like, hey, let's meet up, let's go somewhere, like maybe let's go get ice cream or something. And
I
said,
course.
All right, let's find some ice cream. And then pretty much like everything just came together, you know, naturally. And we ended up having, you know, a comical time.
It was great.
You know,
was
getting to know one another. So yeah. I appreciate you reaching out to me, and you know, and I had a good time getting
of
to know
course.
You and Kaylee.
It was too. A great excuse to ride over the Williamsburg Bridge. And I'm so glad we did it, because that was the only time I got the chance to go to Brooklyn all weekend, except on the Five Borough Tour. So I always forget, like, I don't love Manhattan that much. And somebody needs to remind me, don't stay in Manhattan, Marley. Go to Brooklyn.
Yeah, Manhattan is definitely like a tourist kind of a trap.
Yeah.
Just with a lot of like the theater district and like Times Square and everything else. And then also just the commuters in general that are coming into either Grand Central Station or Penn Station.
100%.
You know, from different places for work Monday through Friday. And it's just like one of those high traffic areas.
Yeah.
And you have to move in and out of Manhattan.
The only way that I think I survive New York is by like finding a little neighborhood that I go to the same coffee shop every day, or, you know, start to find those connections. And I just find that a lot harder to do in Manhattan. And I'm sure you know, it is possible. We were on the Lower East Side and I started to make some of those connections, but I'm just always reminded when I'm there, like, both how alive the city makes me feel and how alone the city makes me feel, and just how gosh dang big it is. So how long have you lived in New York for?
I've lived in New York since the early 2000s. I would say probably 05, 06.
Okay, cool.
Is when I officially moved uptown to Harlem. But I've worked in the city and commuted from Jersey in my early 20s in the fashion business over the years. So I, at one point in time, was pretty much doing either the car, like driving into the city every day, or taking New Jersey Transit.
Oof.
So I've been a commuter myself, like that took the train every day. And I know it was just the constant grind of the city, you know, so I think moving to New York for me was like, it was a huge relief because I could finally just take the subway wherever I needed to go.
Yeah, that makes
and
sense.
I also, yeah, it's just like, I could finally take the subway and it was just like, not own a car, you know, but
recently.
It took me a lot of years. Yeah. It took me a lot of years before I actually got on a bicycle as a commuter.
I would say
so it
you,
wasn't
you
until
became
like
a
my
bike
late
commuter
30s.
Recently. Yeah.
I became a bike commuter, which you could say was in the past, like 6, 7 years. Is really when that took place. So a lot of the cycling stuff is new to me in the sense of, you know, getting to re-experience New York and relearn New York.
Well, let's
relearn
talk about
New
that.
York City in a way as on a bicycle.
Let's talk about that journey a little bit. How did you get into bike commuting? If you'd spent so much time in a car and on public transit, what made you take the leap over to bicycles?
I think that it was, I was working about, I think it was like a 7-mile commute each way on a bicycle. And I really just wanted to live a healthier lifestyle.
All right.
There's just so much, there's a lot involved in the industry that I worked in as far as networking, you know, and being seen, you know, and that means attending events, you know, just attending different events at clubs and different events as far as, fashion events and things like that. And I had always been someone that I could get into the gym a little bit, and start getting a little bit of exercise going in the gym. But that was like less cardio and more like lifting some weights and stuff,
sure,
which ended
sure.
up not being the healthiest thing for me, you know, because my back and muscles got like really tense from that. And pretty much I just wanted to get into a healthier lifestyle. So
All
I
right.
figured if I could get on a bicycle and just do a 7-mile commute each way, that I might just see something different. And that's pretty much what happened for me.
That's awesome. I love
it's
that.
Something clicked and it became just a different way of looking at my entire day.
Yeah.
Because it was about an hour commute for me and it was down the West Side bike path. I was going from Harlem and then down to, just down past Gramercy, like 21st Street. So I had a decent commute that would take me about an hour and I would just get to see the sights of the city in a different way.
Yeah.
So it was just, I would take in a lot more nature. On the West Side bike path, there's just, you're on the Hudson River, you know, and New Jersey's on the other side.
I think
So you
we
get
rode
an
part
idea
of
of
that
just Manhattan.
for...
I think you did with the REI ride that you hosted.
Yeah.
The ride that you hosted, the All Bodies on Bikes with
I think
REI.
so too. That was a lovely path. And yeah, I imagine commuting on that would be quite lovely. Because yeah, you're right. It does. It just changes your whole outlook. It changes your hormone levels, actually. And there's been a lot of research on like the mental health of bike commuters. And it's typically a little bit better. So I think you're spot on with that.
I'd believe it. And I also would, I believe it. And I've definitely experienced that myself.
Well, let's talk about
Because
the work.
That, you know.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, I think something we even talked about over ice cream for a minute was I was saying that just the act of cycling, especially when you're in a city environment and there's other commuters around on bicycles and delivery, you know, you have delivery workers on bicycles. You really have to live in the moment. You have to pay attention to what's going on. You have to have eyes in front of you, behind you. You know, you really can't have, you know, headphones blasting and you need to just be very, very, you know, safety is an issue.
Yeah.
Safety is one of the first issues. You
Does
want
it
to
make
wear a
you,
helmet.
does riding in the city make
Go
you
ahead.
feel more connected to your neighbors and to feel more connected to your community?
Well, I think you're more connected, first off, to nature because you're out enduring the elements in a different way.
Okay.
So that's one thing where, like, if you're stepping out on a bike commute for an hour to get to work, as opposed to just carrying an umbrella into the subway, or carrying an umbrella into the under the bus, say on a rainy day, you get into some like cycling commuter wear, and this is where the fashion kind of comes into play a bit for me too, where you're going to need a rain jacket. You might want a rain pant that's just an over pant that goes over something else, you know? And I think that you begin to start to look at, you know, you're working and kind of battling the elements a little bit, or just preparing yourself for the elements of nature a little bit in a different way. You know,
totally,
I mean, if you're
sense.
All season commuter, even in the city, you know, the weather is going to get down in the 30s. I kind of have my limit where if it's in the single digits, you know, in January or something, I really don't want to be on a bicycle. But this past January and February and March, it was definitely in, you know, the high 20s and I would say low 30s a lot. And I still went out on a lot of different social cycling rides. So I still managed to stay pretty busy.
That's awesome.
On a bicycle throughout the winter months, I'm still pretty busy on the bicycle. So, yeah, cool. I think, but also, yeah, community wise, I would say you're going to see a lot of different things you probably haven't seen before. And you will start to, if you're commuting at certain times during the day, you're going to start to see some people, you know, that are also bike commuters. And, you know, you're going to start to see like different people that actually commute to work every day. So that's kind of an interesting thing where it's kind of the same thing. There's so many people in New York City that if you were to take the same subway to work every day, you start to begin to see the same people.
Right.
The same thing will happen sometimes on a bike path where you will cross paths with someone or, you know. So, you know, there's definitely that element to it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. It used to happen in Seattle. And I guess it totally makes sense that even in a city the size of New York, it would happen because people have their routines. And you're right. You're totally right about that. Well, I want to shift gears a little bit, not to use an overused pun, but you run a couple of like streetwear inspired fashion lines. And please correct me if I say anything incorrectly, but called Concrete Trails and Concrete Revolt. Can you tell me about those and what is the connection to cycling? You alluded to it a little bit, but I want to know more.
Yeah, I would say, first off, Concrete Trails is really just my personal Instagram handle for myself. That's where the name came about. It started as just a personal Instagram handle for myself and the way that I identified in the cycling space, where Concrete Trails was pretty much a New York City bike packer, New York City adventure cyclist.
Okay.
And I followed accounts through Instagram that were only cycling accounts and things that I knew that I wanted to see and things I was inspired by and wanted to learn more about within the cycling space. So it was something for me that just, it was an open book to me where I could really just, I dove in and a lot of the people I connected with in the community I built was on Instagram at first, because adventure cycling, really, obviously, it wasn't born in New York City. So I found a lot of inspiration by following accounts, right? I know it's a funny thing to say.
It's a funny thing to think about. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah, so it's really like, I follow, you know, brand accounts, you know, out of the Pacific Northwest a lot. And then also out of Colorado and California, you know, in places where there was actually, you know, there was more, you know, more adventure cycling and bike packing. And there was just a lot more things, you know, that's where the activity, you know, came from. So I would take that and I would, you know, apply it, you know, to Concrete Trails. You know, me as a cyclist, I would, you know, apply it to me, you know, living in New York City, and began to have my own experiences with it, which for me, it wasn't larger tours. It wasn't a 4 or 5 day or 2 week long, you know, bicycle tour. It was more of a single overnight.
Sure.
And I would actually like nickname that overnight. I would call it an emergency exit because you kind of just jump out real quick to nature and recharge. But sometimes it would just be like leaving on a Saturday morning and coming back on a Sunday night. And I knew that it was a time where I could just be completely dedicated and focused on the small mini adventure on hand, you know, like it was just like focus on the here and now, get us to where we're going. And then just it was a good way to, yeah, it was a good way to reconnect and just plug back into nature and slow down for a little bit.
How did you find places to go?
Some of the first places actually were just, since I was only really doing it overnight, I would, my favorite campsite was actually in Brooklyn. There actually was a campsite open back then, Floyd Bennett Field. It was about a 27 mile ride. And I would meet a couple friends in Flushing, Queens. And I would actually, we would go camp like in Brooklyn. It was a small, like family campsite, small patch of woods, you know, only open during, you know, the spring, summer months, you know, where they actually had running water and everything else in the spring and summer. It was open throughout the winter back then, I'd say 2016, 2017, 2018, where you could actually go camping there in the winter, but there wasn't showers and running water and everything. So it was way more primitive camping. You had to just carry in everything you needed. And I actually camped there on New Year's Eve with a friend.
Oh, that sounds so cool.
Because we wanted a nature New Year's Eve experience. And meanwhile, the ball is dropping in Times Square. But this friend and myself are just like climbing trees and joking around in the woods. And, you know, like basically having this bonfire out there and, you know, with bundles of wood and pretty much cooking food on a campfire.
I love that you're able to find that even in the heart of New York City. That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I also should mention Long Island, because I talk about Long Island a lot, where pretty much, you know, you can do a combination of train, you know, with the Long Island Railroad, you can do a combination of train and bike and, you know, vice versa. But there's a campsite deep in Long Island that I talk about all the time, in East Hampton, and the name of the park is Cedar Point County Park.
Okay.
And there is a bike hostel area. And some people think, oh, bike hostel, like, is it a bunch of lean-tos? No, it's even more primitive than that. It's just a small patch of woods. And you pretty much, if you show up on a bicycle, you're allowed to spend one night there.
Very cool. Okay.
Free of charge. So I've taken advantage of that over the years and rolled in, and, you know, you have access to, you know, there are full campsites there that you can rent if you're staying for a full week, you know, and you can definitely drive in and do that too. But the bike camping experience was just really cool to me, because it's not like a check in and check out or something you needed to like pre-reserve and really schedule. So you actually could make plans last minute. I can make plans last minute and just say, this weekend, I'm going to East Hampton. I'm going to the beach. And that's literally about 120 miles east. So it is far away. Even if you were to take the train, it's still about a 2.5 hour, you know, train commute with the bike. So,
dang, okay.
You know, it's So it's still, So that's actually still one of my favorite places. And I was just talking about it this past weekend. But I mean, from New York City, you also have access to Connecticut. And, you know, Connecticut, obviously that's where, you know, Ron Bikes is based up there. So I just went up there this past weekend for an event. Yeah.
And okay, tell me about this. I saw that you got there at 4 a.m. How and why did you ride all night? Like what happened there that you showed up to the bikepacking trip at 4 a.m?
I'm glad you asked me that, because it's something that I've had to explain to people. So I've had this pattern already this season with just starting up, like, in the Northeast, at least in this part of the country, you have, you know, this is camping season. Usually the campsites open, like the campgrounds officially open in April and May. So you have kind of this window of like April and May through like the end of like September to like officially book a campsite and go places and everything. But there's been a couple campouts already where I just was pretty much just packing up my stuff late. And I decided that I wanted to leave and just kind of like leave into the night. So I pretty much would be solo at night, biking into the night. And it's a way that, you know, it takes me back to 2018 and 2019, when I would do a lot of solo trips, or I would meet some, you know, I would say meet my cousins at a campsite where I knew they'd be there. But I was doing it, you know, biking to the train and then taking a train, you know, to upstate New York and up in the Catskills area. I was going to bike, say, 50 miles on my bike and meet them. Okay. And I would get, you know, stuck in the dark on my bike. And it will become a different experience when you're solo in the dark on a bicycle.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you're, you know, up in Connecticut, you know, up in, you know, just in New York State in the mountains there.
It's totally different experience.
It's a different experience. And for me, it's a bit more spiritual. So it's something that I've really tapped into, something spiritual in my life. I think it has to do with the fear of the unknown, and you're there and you're by yourself. And you have to trust in something. There's no one around. It's pretty much yourself and the bike, and you have what you need. You have some food, you have some water or some snacks. And I know that I'm going to get where I'm going, and I just try to be as comfortable as possible. And it had been a while since I rode like that. So this would be the second camping trip that I did like that, where I actually showed up to a group campsite, but showed up at 4 a.m. You know, so my biking took place the 40 miles I biked, it was about 36 to 40 miles that I just mapped from New Haven, Connecticut, you know, train station, up to Ron's place where he was hosting an event that he calls Spring Fling.
Nice.
Which is just a fun biking event. And I knew there'd be some people there. And I just had this last minute window where I said, you know, I was kind of exhausted just coming in from a train trip to see my family in North Carolina for that past week. And then pretty much I had that Saturday to decompress and I wanted to leave earlier, but I realized that I kind of needed some rest and I needed to take my time. And I said, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? I'm going to bike solo in the dark and I'll surprise everyone at the campsite in the morning at some point.
That sounds so fun.
So that's pretty
I love
much
that.
What happened. Yeah, okay. That's pretty much what happened. And it's the second time that I had done that this season. And like I said, it's a different style of riding. And I think that anybody could benefit from it. But also I think that you have to be somewhat of a seasoned and experienced bike camper.
Sure.
Where you know how to patch a flat or in an emergency situation. You know, like this past ride, I had a decent first aid kit with me. You know, so like you definitely want to have allergy medication and you definitely want to have band-aids. And, you know, if you take a fall and you're by yourself, especially at night, you want to be able to at least treat a wound and, you know, have, you know, spare batteries to power your phone.
Definitely.
And just,
definitely.
You know, make just the basics, you know what I mean? Just like bike touring basics that
yeah.
you want to have down, you know? So I it's the second time I did that. And I still ended up getting a good ride in that day up there. And I still managed to see a decent amount of people this past Sunday at that event. But yeah, I think that anybody can benefit from, you know, just the act and experience of that.
Sure.
The adventure cycling.
All right,
you know,
Todd. I'm
I just also, oh yeah, well, go ahead.
I was saying, I'm just going to bring it back to the fashion because that's what I really want to talk to you about, if that's all right.
Oh yeah, that's fine.
Cool. So Concrete Trails is your Instagram and kind of inspires your writing that you do. Is Concrete Revolt, is that the fashion brand?
Yeah, Concrete Revolt has evolved into what you may call a brand, or what I might call a brand. And it started actually as a collaborative project that goes back to 2021 that was released by myself, Concrete Trails, and Revolta Art, who is based in Tucson, Arizona, who is also
yep.
a cyclist. And she has done a lot of, you know, art for some different publications, you know, as far as some zines like Cyclista Zine. And she does a lot of her own artwork, and she's actually currently painting beautiful murals throughout Tucson, which is pretty cool. And has also done some sculptures recently. So definitely check out her handle, Revolta Art. But pretty much to jump to that, I wanted to keep it going because the collaborative branding together, it was Concrete Revolt, was pretty much the name of the collaborative project. And people really, really reacted well to that messaging in itself. And the messaging in itself is getting back to nature and reconnecting with nature, you know, in any way possible. And especially on a bicycle. And, you know, as far as being a city dweller, it's just a really, really strong message.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
to any city dweller that's out there. So, yeah, so ConcreteRevolt.com is the website right now. And I've just been customizing some products, some vintage
what
products.
What types of products?
All vintage products, really. So far, mostly vintage products so far. And I'm using the most minimal branding possible. So I'm using the patch, the Concrete Revolt patch that was from the original fundraising project from 2021, because we had some leftover patches. So I'm actually just reutilizing, pretty much repurposing and utilizing that patch as the branding on some of these products. So I have some
okay.
vintage fleece, you know, up there, which is actually a really rare find. It's, you know, reverse weave fleece, similar to what you might see from, you know, the Champion brand is
okay.
mostly known for, you know, reverse weave fleece, heavyweight fleece. And there's a popover style with a collar. So you'll see that up there, the Concrete Revolt popover. And some of those, I have some different, you know, some different dye techniques that I've been doing, which I will call a mystery dye technique. And everything I'm doing, it's very, very DIY, do it yourself.
Very
and
cool.
It's a hands-on approach to fashion that I would say encourages people to get creative with fashion and not be intimidated by it in any way.
And it's very
because
like streetwear inspired, right?
I would say definitely streetwear, street fashion inspired, where you definitely have some baggier fits. I definitely wear some things, baggier, looser fitting garments, on a bike, you know, and that's, you know, my look on a bike is just a lot similar to actually what I wear on the every day, you know, day to day in New York City.
Do you, so, this might be a silly question, but I remember seeing you at Mid-South and you were like, you were looking good. Do you have clothes that are specific? You're welcome.
Yeah,
do you have clothes that are specific for riding, or is it all kind of blend over? And we'll have some photos of you to go along with this episode so folks can see what we're talking about.
Oh yeah, that's great. Yeah, there's definitely, I'm known for, you know, there's a couple go-to vintage pants that I ride in, which are basically, you know, some cargo pant style. So you have large cargo pants, you know, large cargo pockets on the side of a pant, similar to, you know, a fatigue looking pant. And I would wear those baggier, and I definitely would roll up the bottoms of the pants, so, you know, the pant doesn't get stuck in the chain or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost looks like a riding capri pant, you know, and I never really rode in traditional cycling garments over the years. And maybe it's just my entry into cycling as a commuter, and then also being in the outdoors as someone that wants to be camping in the woods, that I was always comfortable wearing boots. For example, sure. I would wear something like, you know, a hiking boot. And a lot of people would be in a lightweight hiking boot, you know, on a platform pedal. And pretty much when you need to do a hike a bike and you're, you know, biking on, you know, say single track, you know, paths like I was this past weekend in Connecticut. And if you need to walk the bike up a series of rocks in a rocky hill, or slide down the hill with your bike, you know, walk down a hill, it's possible to do that and easy to do that when you have on just like kind of, you know, looser, you know, clothing, and also just like hiking boots, you know, and regular footwear, as opposed to like your traditional hiking.
I'm a big fan of flats for that traditional cycling stuff. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, Mid-South for a huge event like Mid-South, I would for Mid-South, I would actually, like, you know, try to think about a good gravel riding outfit that would be a lot of fun to get dirty.
Ooh,
because the
okay.
one thing about Mid-South is, you know, that you have these wide gravel, you know, dirt roads, and this brown dirt dust just kicking up all over the place. So this past year, for example, I planned on getting dusty because I had, you know, rode two of those events prior in Mid-South and Stillwater. So I planned on getting dusty, and I planned on having fun with it. So I knew that my outfit, you know, would be orange, kind of dusted over and stuff like that. So these black lace-up loafers that I had on was like a really fun riding shoe. Not only do they grip my pedal really well, because they have a lug sole, so, you know, it actually grips my pedal like really, really well. But yeah, they got dusted over, and it was just a lot of fun to see them, you know, get super dusty and muddy at times and stuff like that throughout the ride.
Did you do
and
the 100?
Kind of just the way I think that. Yeah, I did the 100 this year.
Nice.
And I've done the 100 the past 2 years also, but this will be the first year I was officially signed up for the 100 mile. And it definitely was the strongest 100 miles I had, which it's kind of a long story, but the 100 mile had always been sold out the prior years. So I had signed up. The only thing available was the 12 mile inspiration ride. So there's been a couple Mid-Souths of, you know, 2022 and 2023 where I signed up for the 12 mile inspiration ride, and I just ended up doing 100 miles because I just really wanted to have as much fun as possible and bike 100 miles. You know, that was pretty much my thought process.
I think all my event director friends listening are silently freaking out, saying, "Oh my God, please don't ever do that." No.
And I don't want to scare away any, you know, I don't want to scare anyone away.
No. Like, I don't think you're scaring anybody
concrete
away.
Trails, yeah. Concrete trails is, you know, I might be in some work boots or some hiking boots, or even like, you know, a dressier, like, you know, lace up loafer shoe, but I still have a helmet on. And I'm still very, very conscious of, like, you know, just safety in general.
Okay, good.
Especially on like a large group ride and race like Mid-South, because you will see people fall and you know, and get injured.
Yeah.
And
that's,
I think,
always
that sometimes a cyclist. Yeah. And, I think that there's a lot of people that ask me when you come back from an event like that, you know, they're like, "Hey, did you win?" You know, or like, "How fast did you go?" Or "What was your time?" And for me, it's a lot more about, well, this year, I actually just rode the best I ever rode.
Sure, yeah.
From the past 2 years prior, you know? So I had a really, really strong 100-mile ride. But also, a lot of times we don't give ourselves enough credit for even just having a safe 100 miles.
That's
you
so true.
You have a safe and fun 100 miles. which some people can't do that. Some people get overexcited and they really, really start biking fast, you know,
or
and it doesn't
unsafe
take much to lose control of the bike, you
yeah,
know, it
you're
doesn't
so
take much
correct.
to lose control of the bike. And you have to be aware of other riders around you. And, you know, at Mid-South, especially, you know, there'll be a downhill and there's dust and rocks getting kicked up and things, and you're surrounded by other cyclists. So, you know, it takes a lot of concentration during that 100
Absolutely.
miles, you know, and it's, yeah. And it's not, you know, it's not something to be stressed out about. It's just something that I just like to make note at the end of that and say, hey, you know, I tell myself, I give myself a pat on the back. I say, you did this and you did it safely and you still rode really strong, the best you have, you know, compared to prior years.
Definitely,
So,
definitely.
yeah.
So you're a pretty fashionable human being. What are some fashion trends that drive you crazy? Anything like specifically the cycling in the world that's like makes you cringe, or in the wide world in general?
No, it's funny you say that word cringe though, because that's like a more of a, that's such a newer word that I hear people use all the time. It's funny.
It's
I
my
love
Gen
all
Z
of it
coming
actually.
out.
I think people, there's been a lot of people who said to me like, hey, there was even someone that had said to me at one point in time, like, you know, I could think of a lot more things that the cycling world needs, Todd, than making it more fashionable, you know? And
people say that to you?
I never wanted to make, someone said that to me, but that was like that might've been a couple years ago. And it might've just been because maybe I said something or posted something that was a little bit too, you know, it wasn't, maybe it just didn't make sense. You know, it didn't make sense to them or something like that. But
yeah,
I was going to say that
it's so
for
rude
me,
though.
The fashion of cycling is going to be what always has been. And it's just a mixture of a lot of different things, you know? So you're going to see, obviously you're going to see team jerseys for people who are out there on specific cycling teams, just like you have your all bodies on bikes, like jersey and kit, you know?
Yep.
So you have that whole, you know, your riding kit and your colors for the season. I find that super interesting, although I've never worn anything like a full Lycra outfit yet. I haven't really gotten into that, you know, myself. And I don't know if it will, you know, I don't know if I'll eventually get into that, but right now I like riding in baggier stuff, like I said.
Yeah.
But I love all of it. Like
I love
the colors of, I love the colors of a lot of the Lycra kits. You know, I like seeing a team that, you know, there's, I could point out that in New York City, I think it's Affinity. Yeah, Affinity Bikes, like that team in New York, I see them. They had some cool like tiger camo stuff with like some more like lavender hits and stuff,
Ooh.
Like lavender color logos and stuff. Like there's been some really, really cool kits I see out there. So I'm not hating at all. And I'm definitely not saying that you have to be fashionable on a bike.
Yeah. And I'm not
Because
asking
I
you
love
to hate.
everything that comes
Not
with
asking you
it.
to hate at all.
Yeah. So it's not, yeah. So no. There's nothing that's really cringe besides just a bunch of people maybe all thinking that you have to be cycling in any specific way. Because I don't believe that there's like one specific proper way, you know, to bike.
Yes,
you know,
I
and,
love
and
that.
There was someone that, you know, Joe at 718 Cyclery in Brooklyn, and, you know, Joe runs his own, you know, adventure cycling shop there, and Hayter's adventure cycling tours in New York City here for the past 15 years. And that's something that he really instilled in me a few years ago, where he said, as long as you're having fun riding your bike, you're doing it the right way. And it was something I always, always remembered. And he told me that in person in his shop. And it's just something that always rang true to me, you know, because it shouldn't be a struggle to get on the bike, you know, and go do and go have fun, you know, because it's a healthy exercise. It's fun. And it's a great way to network with people. It has been for me. And, but yeah, I would say there's nothing back to your point. Is there anything that's really cringe? No,
I love
all
that.
of it.
Good. Good.
I love
That's
all of it. I love people that are out there in jorts. There was a time where jorts really weren't my thing. And I said to someone, I said that, you know, I don't know. There's too many riders out there in jorts, you know? And then this friend of mine said to me, Todd, I like jorts. And I was like, you know what? I'm not being open-minded enough. You know, there
yeah.
might be a time where I get into some jorts. I haven't even experienced them myself. So why should I say that I don't, you know, that I wouldn't like them if I haven't really experienced them myself. So yeah, I think that being on a bicycle in general has just made me a lot more open-minded, you know, and aware of myself. And I always say that cycling is maybe the best version of myself.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm
yeah.
the best version of myself on a bicycle at all times. And that's pretty much the way I try to approach life off the bike now too. So, but yeah, as far as fashion, I think that people immediately say to themselves, whoa, fashion sounds very exclusive. sounds like, oh, we're cool and we're wearing this and you're not. And I don't, it's actually for me on a bicycle, it's like the exact opposite of that. I think that whatever it is that you should wear and bike and whatever you feel most comfortable in, and however you feel, you know, like presenting yourself that day. You know, so I think that there's no right or wrong way to do it. You know, there's no right or wrong way to dress on a bike. And I think you should be yourself. And if you want to stand out, stand out, you know. And
yeah.
Then if you're riding with your team and everybody's going to be, say, you know, riding in denim, you can ride in denim. Or if you got, you know, if you have your all bodies on bike, say the purple kit for that ride, like, let's all put on the purple kit, you know, whatever makes you feel good on a bike is what I would endorse, you know. So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Nice. Well, I think that's a really good place to kind of wrap up our conversation. Before I let you go, though, I have some really quick rapid fire questions where you just have to make a choice. That sound good?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. They're
Marley's
easy, though.
Rapid fire questions. All
Marley's
right. All
rapid
right.
Fire.
All
they're
right.
Easy. They're easy. Climbing or descending?
Descending.
Tubes or tubeless?
Tubeless.
CO2 or hand pump?
Hand pump.
Well, old school. All right. All right. And last one, flat bar
Yeah,
or
yeah.
drop bar?
Drop bar.
Drop bar.
Wide drop
Interesting.
bar.
Wide
Yeah,
drop.
wide.
That's like a
Wide
whole
drop bar. Yeah.
Connecticut aesthetic, man. I tell you, you look at like the influence that Ron has had on Ron's bike specifically. We'll put a link to it, but the influence that he has had on the aesthetic of bikes in the Northeast, it is very evident. It's like, you know, the influence that Swift Industries has had up in the Pacific Northwest and like obviously across the whole nation, but it's so interesting the little micro trends that happen from place to place.
Yeah, I would agree. Ron's influence is like it's big in the Northeast and then it's big throughout the country and then globally too.
Yeah.
I would say like, yeah, I would
Yeah.
say definitely. Well, I'm on a crust. I ride a crust Nulla bar
Okay.
right now as my handlebar and it is pretty wide.
I believe that.
You know?
It's
Yeah,
perfect
it is a pretty wide bar. Yeah.
You can mount all the bags up there, which is nice.
Yeah, and then it's funny. I mean, for bag clearance and stuff, it helps to be on a bigger bike. I'm 6'3" myself, 200 pounds. So I'm on a size XL, you know, crust Bambora. So it's a steel frame bike. And you know, one of the advantages to being on a larger bike is you have more clearance for bags. So I could have some pretty large bike bags on there.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you're
So I have bags from
the
Swift Industries and yeah, I have bags from Swift Industries. I have bags from Oveja Negra, you know, Black Sheep in Colorado. And then I do, this past weekend, I did have my Ron's bikes, Fabio's chest on there. That was the handlebar bag I had on this past weekend.
Nice.
To shout out Ron and, you know, thank them for, you know, inviting me out there and everything. And
Yeah, we'll put a
yeah,
link to that.
we had
So
a good time.
thank you so much for this conversation. This has been really fun to chat and learn more about you, Todd.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me on the show. And I also just want to say thank you to yourself and Kaylee and All Bodies on Bikes.
Oh,
Because
thank
it
you
is
so
a team
much.
of people who I've been very, very, you know, I just really can relate to the message of All Bodies on Bikes. I think that, you know, it's you know, any age group, you know, and pretty much any size cyclist and any style, you know, of cycling can definitely come together and it's a healthy movement. And I find it to be fashionable, you know, the way I see it, the way that it is. You know, so I thank the community for that more than anything.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Marlo.
Thanks, Todd.
All right.
This is an All Bodies on Bikes podcast powered by Feisty Media. The show is produced by Maggie and Marley and edited by the team at Feisty Media. Thanks for listening.
Are you ready to embrace your inner Tifosi? Picture this, you fully immersed in your passion with clarity and style. That's what Tifosi Optics is all about. Tifosi, derived from the Italian word for superfan, creates eyewear for those who live and breathe their passions. The superfans, if you will. And now they're inviting you to join the ranks. With Tifosi's innovative design, you can live your passion like never before. Their Glide technology ensures a snug, bounce-free fit, while the integrated hinge makes them a breeze to wear without snagging your hair. All their glasses are crafted from shatterproof polycarbonate with lenses that are more than just stylish accessories. They're your shield against glare and scratches, offering unparalleled eye protection for whatever adventure throws your way. And for those intense moments when the sweat starts to pour, fear not. Tifosi's hydrophilic rubber nose pads increase grip, ensuring your glasses stay put through every twist and turn. Are you ready to take the plunge? Head on over to tifosioptics.com, that's T-I-F-O-S-I optics.com, and use the code FM20 for an exclusive 20% off your order. That's tifosioptics.com, code FM20. So don't just watch from the sidelines. Embrace your inner Tifosi and live your passion with Tifosi Optics. Think about everything you take with you on a bike ride. Snacks, tools, a spare tube. It all has to go somewhere, and sometimes your jersey pockets just aren't the right choice. That is where Fierce Hazel comes in. Fierce Hazel is designed to help get you outside, and they make sustainable bike bags for epic adventures. Fierce Hazel is a woman-led accessory brand who makes eco-friendly bike accessories, including ultralight riding pouches, bike wallets, backpacks, and bike bags. Their products are durable, functional, and uniquely designed so you can worry less and experience more. Fierce Hazel is offering All Bodies on Bikes listeners 20% off. That's right, 20% off. Just use the code ALLBODIES at checkout. Go to fiercehazel.com/discount/allbodies for 20% off your purchase. And, you know, honestly, one of the best things about Fierce Hazel is that their products are designed for all types of cyclists. Whether you're a recreational rider or a racer or a bike packer or somewhere in between, they've got a product that will definitely meet your needs. All of their accessories are lightweight, durable, and rainproof, and they're made with sustainability at the forefront. So you can expect lots of upcycled products and really well thought out designs. Again, check out Fierce Hazel today and use the special discount code ALLBODIES for 20% off your purchase. Go to fiercehazel.com/discount/allbodies for 20% off your purchase. Thanks for being a great supporter of the show, Fierce Hazel.